You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7. ESPN.
It is absolutely beautiful. So not sure if you are on your way to possibly a tea time, or maybe you're on your way home, or maybe you're out there running a honey-do list. Stay cool. And again, we really appreciate you listening in and tuning in to 98.7 ESPN. I'm coming to you live from the living room of my apartment. So as I always like to preface by saying, if you hear one, two, three, maybe five dogs, well, good reason why is because I have five dogs, and they listen to the show. And so sometimes they like what I say, sometimes they don't like what I have to say, and they let me know it, that's for sure. So you might hear a barking dog or two in the background. Ty is holding down the fort in New York City at our studios. Ty, how you doing?
Hello, hello, hello. I'm just doing fantastic today.
Hello, fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't hear a lot of people say fantastic during these very difficult times.
Yeah,
so,
but you got to count your blessings when they happen, right?
You do. You do. That's why I always say, like, all things considered, when someone says, hey, how you doing, Anita? All things considered, I'm blessed. I'm doing all right. So glad you are as well. And Kyrie, of course, is working the show from home. So three-person show with you for the next 3 hours this afternoon. And I think we've lined up a really good one for you. Mike Puma, who covers the Mets for the Post, is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes. You've got the Mets and the Yankees going at it tonight. Garrett Cole, this is going to be his last tune-up, as we like to call it, before opening day. That we're going to see the Yankees take on the Nationals, and that's going to be a good one. Garrett Cole against Mark Scherzer. And the Mets, we still don't, no indication in regard to who the Mets are putting on the bump tonight, huh? As of right now? Again, we're going to have Mike Puma on the show with us at 12:30, so we'll find out from him if he knows who's going to be going up against Garrett Cole. But, you know, again, this is kind of like I was kind of surprised to hear this. Like, Garrett Cole is expected to go seven innings, Ty, tonight. So obviously, if it's a last tune-up for opening night, we should call it, because they will take on the Nationals in the evening. I guess that does make sense. But this is going to be, don't you feel like, in talking to a number of people who cover Major League Baseball, this is going to be a very interesting year and how starting pitching and the bullpens are going to be utilized, considering that it is only a 60-game season. So, based on the conversation, and again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm a baseball gal, because everyone who listens to my show knows that I'm an NFL gal. But in the conversations that I have had, and Ty, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, and no one's really... Let me put it this way. In the conversations that I have had with analysts who do cover Major League Baseball and what they're saying about how important it is in regard to starting pitching and the bullpen, and maybe more emphasis on the bullpen, this is going to be a really crucial year for managers making decisions when to pull, when to stay, in teams' analytic department. I think this is going to be and I think those teams that have like the top-notch analytics department and we really don't know, you know, what the percentage is with teams out there whose managers listen to the analytics department 100% when they get the call or they get the text message or whatever. Well, I don't think they're allowed to have phones in the dugout, right? But when they get the call to be like, all right, hey, listen, it's time to pull him. Like, you know, how much say does a manager have? How much say does a pitching coach have to counter the analytics department when they do make the call to say, hey, listen, time to get this guy off the bump or not? I just think that there's going to be a lot of emphasis on the skippers out there this season and the analytics department. If what we're hearing holds true and really the success to this very shortened season is going to be how the pitchers perform. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, especially when you further that point with the fact that in 60 games, they all count. And that's not just a cliche, because everyone in the regular season says, oh, every game counts. Or in 60 games, you can't afford a 3 or 4 game losing streak. So you have to find that healthy balance, no pun intended, between protecting your players and your pitchers, but also maximizing the, you know, ability to stay in a race and contend for a championship, because you can't fall behind at all. Like, game one, we look at it as, you know, this is a big game between Garrett Cole and Max Scherzer. Like, it's fun. We got two of the best pitchers in baseball going at it, the defending champions against the Yankees. It's a huge game. You can't lose that series. You can't start off on that wrong foot. So, you know, to your point about how to allow the analytics to be infused, you also got to protect your players as well, because you can't burn out the bullpen. You know, the pitchers, they still haven't really gotten into that rhythm and flow as they would have if they had a full spring training. So it's going to be tough, but it'll be fun to watch as a fan.
I'm sure. I just, again, and you know, you make an excellent point, you know, and one of the biggest criticisms about Major League Baseball is the fact that the season is so long, right? Like, oh, it's too long. They really got to shorten the season. Now, obviously, because of COVID-19, you know, here we are and we're about to embark on a season that is shortened, and the importance of games. You know what I mean? I think you hit on a really great point, Ty, and that is every game matters. Every game is significant. And not to say that prior to this, that every game wasn't significant, but at the same time, you know, if the Yankees lost, or let's say the Mets, if the Mets lost like 5-6 in a row, you still were like, hey, listen, you know, here's the thing. I love using this phrase. There's an ebb and flow to a season, right? There's an ebb and flow to a season. And you can, when you compare different sports, one ebb and flow is more significant than the other. Like, for example, in the NFL, I always say that I don't like, not this past CBA, but the CBA before, I didn't like the changes that were made because, you know, it was less contact at practice, training camp. I just felt like for the past few years, teams start the NFL season week one and they're really not ready. And I talk about this in regard to gambling, right? Because there's a huge risk reward in gambling the first 3 or 4 weeks of the NFL season, because teams have not established an identity yet. And again, I think a big reason is because how things changed with the previous collective bargaining agreement. But you know, after week three, teams then create an identity. You kind of have an idea of where they're at, you know, where are they ranked defensively, where are they ranked on the offensive line, all that. And you kind of have an idea of so for example, you know, if NFL teams, if a team's lost 4 in a row, the probability of that team making it to the postseason is like slim to none. And those are the statistics that are out there in regards to the NFL. Major League Baseball, it's different. Right? Like, a team could go out there and lose, like, you know, the Mets have lost like 10 straight games, but there's still hope in the back of your mind that once Cespedes gets healthy, or once Cano gets healthy, or once Noah Syndergaard gets back in action, you know, the Mets, that, you know, the season's so long, you know, they could turn it around. It's not going to be the case this year. You know what I mean? It's not going to be the case. Every game is going to be significant. You can't go out there and lose 10 in a row and be like, oh, it's all right. You know, once we get these players back, we'll be fine. So, I think it's going to make the season even more enjoyable, because every game is going to matter and every game is going to be significant. And so you're going to be, hopefully, you know, sitting on the edge of your couch watching every game like it's a playoff game. Which I think is going to make the season fun, you know? Here's another thing for you, Ty, to think about. And listeners out there, 800-919-3776. You know, this pandemic environment we're living in now has changed the way that we do a lot of things, right? Like, a lot of us aren't eating out as much anymore, even though, especially I live in Hoboken, you've got all these restaurants now that have these outside cafes. I still won't go. Listen, I support the restaurants in around the area. I order in, but I have begun. I cook a lot more now than I ever have before. You know what I mean? And I enjoy it. And God bless air fryers, which, by the way, it's amazing to me. I know I'm off on a different topic right now, but it's amazing to me how many people don't know what an air fryer is. Like, I'm actually thinking about writing like an air fryer cookbook or doing like air fryer videos, because there's so many people out there that are just like in the dark. You guys got to Google. Air fryer is like it's been a pandemic savior for me. But anyway, I've digressed. I just feel like in this pandemic world, there's a lot of things that have changed, right? Like work, for example. Like, from what I understand, there's a lot of companies that aren't going to have office space anymore. You know, companies are finding that we as human beings are actually more productive at home than we are at the workplace. Our commute is a waste. What if you live in Connecticut? 2.5 hours to get into the city. Yeah, you might do some work on the train, but really, how much? Also, you're working from home. Sometimes kids go to bed at 9 o'clock. Maybe there's nothing on TV. The wifey's falling asleep or the hubby's falling asleep. Oh, let me get online. Let me do some work. Now you're working at 9 o'clock at night. You're getting stuff done. So companies are saying to themselves, wow, this is the productivity is off the charts right now. It's pointless to have these folks come into the city, travel. Maybe this is something that will be really significant. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm throwing it out there that maybe a shortened season is something that Major League Baseball will consider. Now, maybe not, because obviously money's involved here. A shortened season, less games, less broadcasting money. I understand all that. But having a shortened season and having each game matter and be so significant and so relevant could be more enjoyable for the sports fan. I'm just throwing it out there. Agree or disagree with me, Ty?
Totally agree. But
we know it's not going to happen because the Benjamins, right? Like more games, more money, and especially after the pandemic situation, Major League, all the leagues are going to lose money because of no fans or little fans. I get it. And you've produced a number of my shows since COVID-19. And I always like to look back on my week or look back on certain situations and pick out the positive in what we're experiencing. And this just might be the positive because we might enjoy this season more because there's going to be more on the line because of less games.
Yep. But I feel like that, to your point about we've always complained, you know, baseball being such a long season.
It is so long.
The phrase, you know, the dog days of summer.
Ugh.
Because like you're sitting on your couch and you're wondering how much does this game really matter? Like what's the value number in this game? But this season you won't get that. And I think if you are a fan of a team who wasn't expected to really contend this year, now you're all in, because in 60 games, can you fake? Can you be a phony? Can you become a phony in 60 games? A team that isn't really that good, but masking itself by the small sample size. I think that's what's going to be fun.
Here's another thing for you. Like, and this might sound really morbid, and I apologize if it does, but like COVID-19 and this pandemic plays a major role in sport. Teams who can avoid COVID-19, especially affecting their premier starters in appropriate times, has an advantage. So teams that have exceptional medical staffs, teams who have veteran leaders that are in their clubhouse or wherever they're going to be, right? Like, I don't know what the clubhouse situation is going to be in Major League Baseball. But like teams who have veteran guys who are going to hold each other accountable. Like, dude, you might not wear a mask, but you got to wear a mask for us. You know, Dwight Howard reported in the NBA bubble for not wearing a mask. Like, you know, this is going to be a crucial equation to teams having success in doing well this season. You have to take it into consideration. teams who have great leadership within, on the roster, coaching staff, skippers, general managers, owners. Like, COVID-19 is a factor. And with a shortened season, you know, it's part of the handicapping will be, you know, teams that are more wise, more sophisticated, more responsible, avoiding contracting the virus and contact tracing. And trust me, some teams will be better at it than others. It's fascinating. Just everything. It's just very, very fascinating. And you could use that same philosophy when it comes to the NBA as well as the NFL. 800-919-3776. We come back. We'll take your calls. Like I said, Mike Puba is going to be joining us in 15 minutes. You got the Mets and the Yankees tonight. We know that Garrett Cole will be on the bump for the Yankees. He's expected to pitch 7 innings. This is his last warm-up for the season to begin against the Nationals and Mark Scherzer. So we'll find out from Mike Puma exactly who the Mets, maybe hopefully he knows who the Mets are going to be utilizing tonight. Also in our second hour, Tom Rinaldi is going to join us from the Memorial. You've got Tiger Woods, y'all. And, he's 1-under on the day. And he's finished already. So he's 1-under on the day. So he's +2 on the board. This was, Tiger's first tournament back. Since I call it the pandemic pause. So Tom Rinaldi will join us from the Memorial in Ohio with an update on Tiger and the tournament. That's at 1:30. At 2 o'clock, good friend of mine, Greg Cassell from NFL Films is going to join us. I booked him on the show earlier this week because I wanted to get his thoughts. A lot of, obviously, Patrick Mahomes getting a monster deal. Dak Prescott not getting a deal at all. Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. I kind of want to have a quarterback discussion with Greg Cassell. And I think he's brilliant. I think he's one of the best in the business. And his thoughts of the quarterback landscape and what we can expect from this season. Hopefully we will have one. And Ashley Mayhew, very, very young, talented woman that I just recently started working with. We do a show on Thursday nights and it streams on my Twitter account from America's Best Racing. Betting at night, and she's just absolutely brilliant, and she handicaps horse racing. We've got a big race happening at Monmouth later on this afternoon, the Haskell Stakes. So she's going to jump on board. That's appointment radio, especially for you horse racing freaks out there, at 2:30 to break down the Haskell Stakes and how you could possibly win money at Monmouth today online. So excited for the show. We've got a lot of talented people, and we've got Ty and Kyrie who are working the show as well. So, and we've got you.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Later on tonight, you've got the Mets and the Yankees. We'll see Garrett Cole for 7 innings. We got Mike Puma, who covers the Mets for the Post. He's going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. Let's go to your phone lines, 800-919-3776. Let's go to Tony. Tony in the Bronx. Welcome in.
Hey, Anita. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
I was listening to your conversation about the season being so long, and, you know, I've always been an advocate about, a shortened season, maybe bring it down by 30 games, take out September and make September kind of like your postseason run, and August be kind of more of that sprint to the finish. But with the circumstances the way that they are, it kind of brings up something interesting that I was thinking about. I wonder if you know, they would ever entertain, you know, kind of like a season A and a season B, kind of like a 60-game season A or 70-game season A, 70-game season B, where you almost have your own individual, you know, playoffs for each season, and then somehow everybody gets combined at the end for like a real full postseason run, you know, in September or October. My thing is really just, you know, baseball needs to kind of be a little bit more creative, and I feel like with everything that's going on, it's a good opportunity for them to exercise some creativity and see what the response would be, particularly with fans that don't typically watch baseball. Because I was telling your caller, I love baseball beyond, you know, words can say, but it's incredibly boring, and I'll be the first one to admit it. That's coming from someone who watches it and plays it, and still, I can't watch anybody other than the Yankees. I refuse to turn on anybody if it's not my Yankees, and the truth is because it's a little boring. So that's just my thought. Thank you for taking my call, though, Anita.
Tony, listen, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. You know, way to think out of the box. I don't envision that happening, but appreciate the creativity. Let's go to Omar in East Brunswick. Omar, welcome in.
Hey, Nita, I just started listening to your show about like 2 weeks ago, but you know, you're really great. I'm really upset that I didn't tune in earlier, but I'm here now.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Omar. I appreciate that.
No problem. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on tonight's potential World Series matchup preview between the Mets and the Yankees.
You must be a Mets fan, Omar.
I'm a very big Mets fan, yeah. I love the Mets. So I just wanted to get your thought on what we might see differently tonight, possible. If you know yet who's pitching for the Mets yet, because I have no idea. I've been hearing only that DeGrom's taking BP, but I've also heard that he might pitch. So I just want to get your thoughts on that. And I also just, I want to get your thoughts on that. And also the potential the Mets have for this year.
Sure. Omar, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. We're going to have Mike Puma on the show with us momentarily, and I will ask him. Here's the thing. I know that the MRI came back and it came back and it seems very positive for Jacob DeGrom. I will ask Mike Puma about that as well. So I don't anticipate him going to tonight. Maybe he will. I don't know. I think maybe it would be best if the Mets just kind of like keep him on the shelf until their opener. But listen, it's not my wheelhouse. So it is Mike Puma, and he's on with us next. So I will pose that question to him, Omar. Thank you for the phone call. MRI results came back. Sounds very positive. Mike Puma joins us. He covers the Mets for the Post. Mike, welcome in. Happy afternoon for you.
Yeah. Happy kind of fake opening day here. Finally get a game in New York.
Finally. So before we start really diving into the Mets and everything, I'm going to ask you, like, what is it like this season for, you know, a beat reporter to cover a team in a COVID environment?
Yeah, it's like nothing I've ever experienced. The whole routine of it, going to the ballpark and you're not allowed, you know, you're allowed in the press box, but you can't leave the press box, and you're doing your interviews on Zoom calls, and you're trying to keep up with what's going on the field. You got your binoculars out, trying to keep tabs on who's there, who's not there. It's a completely different experience. You know, the players have started to get used to it a little bit. I don't know if I've gotten used to it yet, though.
I think it's going to be a lot getting used to, that's for sure. So tonight, we know that Gerrit Cole is going to go, from what I understand, like 7 innings for the Yankees. Do we know who is going to be the starting pitcher for the Mets tonight?
Yeah, the Mets are going with Rick Porcello, and I would expect them to stretch him out pretty good, maybe into that 6-inning neighborhood. Tomorrow they're going to go with Corey Oswalt. I think originally the plan was to use Jacob DeGrom in that spot, but with his sore back, they're going to hold him back, have him throw a simulated game. So we'll see Porcello tonight, Oswalt tomorrow.
Yeah, so I would imagine, right? Like we're really not going to see DeGrom, and hopefully, you know, the back continues to heal. Like realistically, we probably won't see DeGrom until opening day, right, against Atlanta.
Yeah, that's their plan right now, is to get him up to maybe 60 pitches tomorrow in that simulated game, and then Friday, ideally, it would be all systems go. When I say all systems go, 80, maybe 85 pitches. He probably won't get up to 100 in that first start.
You know, Mike, Ty and I were having a conversation prior to when we started the show, prior to you joining us. You know, with the 60 game season, you know, the intensity of the fan watching these games, unlike any other season, obviously, because with a 60-game season, like, every game matters. You know, you could have, like, let's say the Mets lose 10 straight games, but yet you're banking on the fact that, duh, they're going to get Noah Syndergaard back in 3 weeks. You know, he'll be back in July. We'll be fine. Like, you don't have that narrative anymore. So are the players feeling the intensity in the start of the season, considering like every game matters even more so than, you know, a regular season?
I think at some level they understand it, but at the same time, it's probably not going to really hit them until they get into the season a little bit and look up. And if you're, you know, 3 or 4 games back after a couple of weeks, you're going to be like, oh, wow, we don't have that many games left. So, I mean, I guess the approach I'm trying to take here is that once opening day comes, every team in the league is 51-51. And it's a 60-game sprint to the finish.
That's a good way of putting it, that's for sure. All right, so a few storylines surrounding the Mets besides Jacob deGrom. Cespedes and Cano, what can we expect from them this season health-wise? Are they going to be ready for opening day? Bring us up to speed on both of them.
Yes, Cespedes has been one of the big stories in this camp, and he's looked pretty good. Hitting the ball, the power is still there. You know, the question all along has been his mobility, and he's showing that he can move adequately. He was on the bases the other night, ran out a double. He's played some left field. Now, he hasn't gotten tested too much out there, but I think we're going to see him maybe tomorrow out in left field at Yankee Stadium to give him another test, and probably the DH tonight. So at this point, he looks like he's a go for the season. Cano got a little bit delayed in spring training, missed just over a week for unexplained reasons. He's been back now for a few days, and I think the feeling is he'll get enough at-bats to be ready for opening day. He's been playing in the simulated games, and I don't think there's too much concern there. I think he'll be ready.
Talk about how the DH is going to really help both Cespedes and Cano, but the potential season that I think Cespedes can have because of the DH spot.
Yeah, that's a big plus. You know, coming into this season, you didn't know if Cespedes could be a factor because when spring training started, the National League still didn't have the DH, and if he was going to play, he was going to have to go on and be in left field every day or a few days a week, and obviously that puts a grind on your legs. Now the DH, they can make him, if they choose, they can make him the DH full-time, which I don't think they'll do. I think they'll try and play him in left field a little bit because they want to maintain some flexibility in that DH spot, which is good because you have Robbie Cano, who's 37 years old and can take some at-bats there. You have a guy like J.D. Davis or Dom Smith who could take at-bats there, and if you want to rest Wilson Ramos behind the plate, he'd keep his bat in the lineup. Well, that's an opportunity for him, too. So the Mets, more than most National League teams, are really going to benefit from the DH.
Mike Puma joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, covers the Mets for the Post. In the conversations I've had with a number of analysts, they're all focusing on the bullpen. How would you rank the Mets bullpen coming into this season?
It's hard to say because if you had asked me last year, I would have thought it was a pretty good bullpen coming into the season. And then we saw what happened, that it, you know, Edwin Diaz didn't adjust to pitching in the National League, and Jeurys Familia had a terrible season. Now those guys still have high upsides, you know, and the Mets are going to count on both of them. They need one of those guys to be pretty good. They have Seth Lugo, who's done a good job the last 2 years, but you know, ideally, you want a back-end guy who's going to come in ninth inning and just be able to go out there 2-3 days in a row and shut it down in the ninth inning. They have Dellin Betances now. He's looked pretty good in camp. But there's questions about his durability coming off the Achilles. So they have some high-end arms there. They need at least one of them to emerge and be dominant there.
You know, Mike, another conversation I was having with Ty before you popped on is and I don't hear a lot of this type of discussion, the importance of the analytics department and the manager this year making the decisions when to keep pitchers in, when to pull them. because of the shortened season, and I like to call it the dance, right? The dance that we're going to see happen with decisions in with pitching.
Yeah,
What's your confidence in Luis Rojas and the analytics department for the Mets in making sure that they're on top of it?
Well, I think one of the reasons Rojas was hired is he basically is an extension of the front office. The role he was in last year as the quality control coach, he was kind of serving as that go-between between the front office and the coaching staff. And, they meet extensively about everything. I've never seen so many meetings, both, you know, in spring training. There were a lot, and now that we've resumed here in summer camp, they meet about everything. So no stone is going to go unturned, and I think it'll be, you know, they talk about collaboration's a big buzzword with the Mets, and I think this will be a much more collaborative effort than we've seen in the past.
How important do you think teams' analytics department are going to play a role in whoever wins a World Series this year?
I think it'll play a big role. I don't know how you quantify that. You know, I don't know how you measure who's got the best analytics department or who's got the most weapons, so to speak. But, you know, analytics obviously has become a big part of the game here. And, you know, the Mets were kind of behind in that category a couple of years ago, and they've really bulked up in that area the last year or two under Brody Van Wagenen.
Mike, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Actually, before I let you go, I do want to ask you, because I've got a caller who's on hold right now, and Chris from Morristown, and he's inquiring about Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez and the potential purchase of the Mets. What is the latest in that regard? What have you heard?
From the indications I'm getting, it's Steve Cohen's to lose. Now, we already saw it fall apart once with Steve Cohen, so I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk at this point, but it seems to me like if Steve Cohen wants this team, he's going to get it.
And when do you think, you know, time frame, you know, when do you think that decision will be made? Like, what's the next step? What can fans anticipate in regard to hearing how this is all going to play out?
I think we'll hear something in the next couple of months. They want to get something done before the off season starts. Obviously, that's when you do your heavy lifting and building toward next season. They got to have some kind of financial plan going in the off season. So I would think we'd have something done by maybe October.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Mike, thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon. I really do appreciate your time, and enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks for having me, Anita.
You got it. Again, Mike Puma, make sure you follow him on social media. And he covers, obviously, the Mets for the Post. Porcello on the bump tonight, going up against Gerrit Cole. He says that you can expect him for about six innings. Reports are that we can expect, Yankee fans could expect, Gerrit Cole for about seven.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7. ESPN.
Without further ado, Greg Cosell joins us. You see him all over NFL films. I've had him on the show before, and you've heard me say I truly believe he's one of the best in the business. And so we're thrilled to have you on today, Greg. Thank you so much.
Anita, good to be with you. How you doing?
I'm all right. You know, as I always say, I like to preface all things considered.
Yes, for sure.
healthy, and blessed. So thank you. I know when the pandemic, we had you on before, as you know, during the draft. That was the last time we had you on the show, and I know that was a crazy time back then. You know, I like to say, I have found my pandemic groove. You know, playing a lot of golf. I've picked up playing tennis. I'm hiking on Sundays. Hopefully you have found yours.
I don't know. I think since maybe mid-March, I've probably been out of my house like seven times. So I don't know if I'm in any kind of pandemic groove at all. But that's the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I hear you. I hear you. It's a frightening time. I wanted to book you on the show, and I'm thrilled that you're on because, you know, there's been a lot of really news pertaining to a number of quarterbacks in the NFL. So let's start first and foremost with Patrick Mahomes in the deal that he got. It really, really remarkable. you know, and beyond that, there's an article that came out in GQ magazine talking about Patrick Mahomes. And in the interview, he mentions how Roger Goodell has reached out to him a few times to kind of pick his brain in regards to the future of the NFL. And I said this on my show. I said this on my show the other day. You know, I think the NFL needed Patrick Mahomes just as much, if not more, than Patrick Mahomes needed the NFL. Would you agree or disagree with that?
You know, I don't normally think of things in those kinds of terms, Anita. I mean, you know, it's funny, being home, I've spent the last, I don't know, 3 months or 4 months just sitting watching tape and watching sort of whatever I want. And it's kind of fun to watch one player or one team 5 or 6 or 7 games in a row, which I can't really do during the season. So I watched a ton of Mahomes. He was a guy I just felt like watching. Not that it was going to change my point of view, but obviously he's a great player. But he's a real interesting guy to watch because he's different than a lot of quarterbacks in the way he plays. He's a guy that moves a lot, and there's such a looseness to his game, but he's got an unbelievable ability to see things when he moves. And he's got great what we call second reaction ability. He can make unbelievable throws off movement. Now, he often moves when he doesn't have to move, but he compensates for that because he's so good with his vision and his ability to throw the ball with power down the field from any throwing position. So he's a very unique guy.
So, you know, a lot of people look at the deal, and of course, you know, only cap specialists can really understand the dynamic of it. But, you know, for the average NFL fan, you know, they see $45 million a year. But I just feel it's money worth spent because I think he's an exceptional talent. And when you look across the board and you look at quarterbacks and you look at teams that have success each and every year, making it to the postseason, winning and advancing, you know, they all have top notch quarterbacks. And to me, you know, I think you can argue that he's the best right now.
Yeah, and he's the next. The money's the money. He's the next man up. It always works like that. So, you know, the next guy could get more. And then people will say that, oh, well, he's not as good as Mahomes. But the money just becomes the money. I don't really get focused on that. You know, obviously, he's a great player. He's a young player. So they chose to sign him. And I think it was technically done as an extension, right? So it doesn't kick in at this moment. But, yeah, and again, we know that long-term contracts like that don't go for that length with the numbers that are given out now. So we'll see how it plays out. But no, it makes perfect sense. He's a great player. They've clearly made a commitment to the way they want to play with speed. I mean, they're the fastest team in the NFL. They're a very difficult team to defend. They're creative on offense with Andy Reid. So it's sort of a perfect storm in a good way. They've got a quarterback that is creative in his own way, that has a big, big arm. And they've got a ton of speed that's really difficult to defend.
Another quarterback I wanted to tee up for you is Dak Prescott, who did not get a lengthy long-term deal done with the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to be playing, if there is a season this year, on a franchise tag, a little over $31 million. Yep. And you know, the entire week there was so much talk about Dak Prescott, and some analysts, you know, feel that this is a bad move on the part of the Dallas Cowboys, you know, that he's an exceptional talent. He's a top-notch quarterback. In fact, Mike Tannenbaum came out on this show and said that he feels that he's the second-best quarterback behind Patrick Mahomes. For me, you know, and when I look at the numbers and I look at his game, I just, if you're going to pay a quarterback that kind of money and commit to a quarterback long-term, to me, that quarterback has to be a quarterback that's going to win football games for you on his merit alone. I just don't look at Dak Prescott as a quarterback that can win football games unless he's got Ezekiel Elliott rushing for 100 yards or he's got Amari Cooper on the field. Your assessment of Dak Prescott?
Well, Greg? Yeah, I would disagree with Mike, and I know Mike well. Prescott's another guy I looked at in detail this offseason. I think he's a good player. I think that he's got plus arm strength. I think he's much more of a thrower than a natural passer. I don't think he's a naturally aggressive thrower. I think that he's not a pure turn-it-loose guy. I think he's not as precise with his ball placement as you would like a quarterback to be consistently. He's certainly not scattershot, but he's not quite as precise with his accuracy. you know, I think he's a little stiff-legged and rigid in the pocket at times, and that impacts his accuracy. He does have a good feel for pressure. He can make second reaction plays. I think he's a good player. I don't think I wouldn't put him as the second best quarterback in the league, but he's a good player, and you can win with Dak Prescott. You can win with a lot of quarterbacks, but you know, I certainly wouldn't put him at quite that level of quarterback.
If you had to rank him, you know, would it be in the top 10? Would it be in the top 20? Where would Dak Prescott
I mean, you have to start going through the quarterbacks in the league, and I know there's been that big debate seemingly with Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott. I would take Carson Wentz in a heartbeat over Dak Prescott, but I'm sure some people would disagree with that. I think you'd have to put Russell Wilson up in that category based on what he's accomplished in this league. You know, it's interesting how certain players get viewed a certain way and other players don't. You know, people always talk about, well, you have to win. Okay, so if you have to win, if that seems to be the foundation of what some people think, then why are quarterbacks who get to the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl not considered good quarterbacks? You know, Jimmy Garoppolo's not played very long, and there's no way he's a top three or four quarterback in the league. But Jimmy Garoppolo gets dismissed as if he had a bad year. I mean, he played for a team that got to the Super Bowl. So I find it very difficult to judge quarterbacks just by getting to a Super Bowl. I think you can win a lot of different ways in this league. I think you can win games with a lot of different quarterbacks. I tend to be a traits and attributes guy when it comes to the quarterback. I'm not around them individually, so I can't speak to character and leadership. So I tend to, when I watch tape, to look at traits, attributes, consistency of execution. And, you know, that's the way I go about it.
Greg Cassell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN from NFL Films. And I totally agree with you in regard to Carson Wentz. And I said that quite often this past week, of course, with all the Dak Prescott news and the debate in regard to who's the best quarterback in the NFC East. One more quarterback I want to tee up for you, and that's Tom Brady. Listen, we know how great Tom Brady is. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on what your expectations are, him making the move to Tampa, in a few regards here. Follow me. Number one, the offensive line in Tampa, how that's going to play out for Tom. Also the fact that we are living in this COVID pandemic world where we don't know exactly, you know, we're anticipating training camps to open on the 28th. I highly doubt that they will. I do believe, you know, players are debating or you know, arguing with the NFL. They don't want any preseason games. So the preparation in the system that Bruce Arians is going to be running with Tom Brady, right now it's Tom Brady learning it on Zoom and holding these, you know, passing get-togethers with his wide receivers. So I'm really curious to get your thoughts and your expectations for Tom this season, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're going to see with a lot of teams, particularly with new players, and as great and as smart as Brady is you're going to see a lot more basic stuff, base concepts, because you're just not going to have enough time to do more than that, Anita. So you're going to see base concepts that everybody runs. And obviously, Brady is a quarterback that really wants to feel comfortable with his receivers. When he played in New England, there was a lot of things done on the move after the snap where Brady and his receivers read things the same way. That takes time. That's not going to happen right away. But I think that Bruce Arians has been doing this a long time, and he's going to mix in a lot of what Tom Brady does well and what he likes to do with what Bruce Arians does. So I think it'll eventually work out. It's just early in the season for a lot of teams. It's just going to be base stuff. And that's, by the way, that's on both sides of the ball, not just for passing games and offense.
Interesting. I'm really hoping there's a season, Greg.
I don't sound optimistic, Anita.
I'm not. I'm not. In the conversations that I've had with, you know, people I know within the NFLPA and the NFL, you know, they want to be as optimistic as possible, but it's frightening. It's frightening. And
I know that
the NFL is doing all that they can to, as I like to call, cross the T's and dot the I's. You know, listen, we know guys are going to contract COVID-19, really, you know, and we're seeing it on the PGA Tour. We're going to see it unfold within the NBA bubble. But really, what it's going to come down to is contact tracing and really getting a handle on it before it really can take out a team. That's really what it's going to come down to, Greg.
I'm concerned, too, to be honest with you, because I know a lot of them. I'm concerned about coaches because there's a lot of coaches who are older and probably somewhat medically compromised. And you know how coaches are. They work a lot of hours, Anita, and they probably don't get as much sleep as they should. So maybe their immune systems aren't what it should be. It'll be interesting. I mean, you know, I think it's going to start. The question is, can it finish?
Yeah, I mean, you know, here you're talking about Bruce Arians. You know, as much as I love him as a coach and he's a really cool person, he's someone who's compromised. He doesn't, you know, health-wise, he hasn't had a good run at it as of late. And you're right. I don't think, you know, fans, I don't think they really realize, and how could they? Like, you and I cover the league. We know, like, you know, coaches are at the facility until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. They go home. They'll go home for just a few hours, and they come back. They're back at the facility.
Right.
They're back at the facility at 5 or 6 a.m. Like they just – and that's every night. Every night.
They fight through a season. I mean, they love it. That's why they do what they do, but they fight through a season. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, look, things change seemingly daily with all this. Hopefully, maybe in a month from now, we'll – be on an upturn instead of a downturn, but we'll see what happens.
Greg, one last thing I'll share with you, because I have a very good friend of mine, Dr. Nick Morrissey, who joins me on the show on occasion, and he made a very interesting point last time I had him on last week. He said, you know, when your body goes through trauma, like if you're, God forbid, like somebody's in a car accident, your immune system is weakened because of the trauma that your body has faced. And you and I both know, like, you know, football players, pretty much what they do on Sunday is go through a car accident type of body experience, where Monday, Tuesday is really the days that they're trying to recover. They're sore, they're achy, their bodies have just been through the ringer. And so he made an excellent point. He's like, more than any other sport, because of the contact, the physicality of it, their immune systems are going to be depleted because of the physicality that they play with on Sunday, Greg.
Well, he would know that more than I, but obviously they do go through that every week. He would certainly know about the immune system. I don't know about that.
I just want to share that with you. I had not heard of that before. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that. So again, another thing that the NFL should be concerned about. Anyway, Greg,
we'll see, because players will want to get paid. You know, they always do. So we'll see what happens. They're going to try. That's all we know now. They're going to try. We'll see how it goes.
Greg, again, I so appreciate your time. It's great to hear your voice. I'm glad that you're safe and you're being smart, and appreciate your insight as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Anita. Appreciate it. Stay well.
You got it. You got it. Greg Cosell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, Tom Rinaldi joins us from the Memorial Tournament. Tom, so appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. I see you all over ESPN and SportsCenter, so thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Anita.
I really appreciate it. Let's pick up where we just heard Michael Collins on Tiger Woods. What did you see from Tiger the last 3 days?
So I think we've seen a sort of a different version of him, if you will, each day. We saw him get back, get his competitive juices flowing. Here's a guy that doesn't play for 151 days, Anita. What does he do? He birdies the first hole back in competition. Now things got, you know, a little bit wobbly toward the end of that round, but he finishes subpar, 71. And then Michael was spot on regarding Friday, where he had some back stiffness and then the back tightened up a lot more significantly, especially when he made the turn. And that was his 10th hole, the first hole. He made double there when he laid back with the 5-wood. He then had consecutive tee shots where he couldn't finish with both hands on the club. And you saw him having some limits physically. And now today he finishes again 1 under. But most importantly, the biggest victory without any physical limitation or complaint, at least as he shared with us post-round. And he looked a lot more fluid, and I've walked every hole with him so far.
You know, Tom, we're living in this day and age now where, you know, we've got the DeChambeau's of the world, crushing the ball 425 yards, right? And I listened to DeChambeau's comments about Tiger Woods and referring to him as the old man earlier this week. Do you feel that's tough for Tiger, you know, when he's paired up with, you know, guys like, well, haven't seen him really paired up with DeChambeau, but like guys like that, that are crushing the ball, and it's got to eat him up inside, I would imagine, like, oh man, I used to be able to do that, and he can't do it, and he's got to play this different game now. How much of a factor do you think that's going to be for Tiger Woods in the next few years?
That comment that you point to, Anita, was just classic when he dropped the, for anyone who's older than 30, when you hear someone say to you, for her age.
Right.
For his age. That is brutal. And so that's what I think caught a lot of attention. Tiger, I think, simply shook his head. Those comments came after they played a practice round together Wednesday morning at Tiger's invitation. Remember, Tiger has very tight connections with a lot of these guys. He was just the captain of the Victorious President's Cup team. He was the best player on that team. Woods was. DeChambeau, in fact, only played twice during those 3 days and accepted it very well. But as an example today, Tiger stepped on several tee shots where he was out in front of Brooks Koepka,
Ooh.
Who the last time we checked is not exactly short off the tee himself.
Right.
So really the power of Tiger's game, and in power I mean the best part of his game, is his iron play. And there was a time when he was the bully of the tee box. But for a long time now, Anita, it's really been mastery of his irons and his wedges. And when those are dialed in and he can make putts, he's going to contend. He's played well so far this week overall with his irons. Those have been the sharpest part of his game.
And when looking at the metrics and how to win at Mirrorfield Village, that's really, you know, strokes gained on approach, strokes gained, greens in regulation percentage. So, you know, it totally makes sense why he's won here five times. And just to stick on DeChambeau and just how he's absolutely crushing the ball, I thought it was interesting, Jack's comments this week, you know, listen, we've got to do something about this. Enough is enough already. Like, get a hold of the ball. Like, and folks that are listening right now, maybe you're not big golf enthusiasts, but the golf ball is equipment alone in the sport of golf has just become ridiculous in regard to how far dudes are driving the ball and how it's changed the game. You can't make the courses any longer. There's just not enough real estate anymore, Tom. Do you see in the future equipment changing, balls changing?
Boy, you preach, woman. There's a lot of people who are with you there. And Jack Nicklaus is one of them. In fact, he's been preaching and leading this course for the better part of a couple of decades, where he has called for the R&A. He's called for the leading lights of the game to try to dial the golf ball back, Anita, because of exactly what you said. We can't continue to take up more and more real estate, extend holes, move tee boxes back. We've got to get the golf ball under control. Technology, when it comes to clubs, that's a separate discussion as well. But the golf ball, even if it turns out to be that you and I play with a different ball with different specs than the pros do. Because the truth is, they already play an incredibly different game. Their technology is already different. I mean, no one is hitting a 3-degree face driver, which is what DeChambeau hits, which is crazy. I mean, even pretty good players, club players, would have a hard time getting that ball airborne off the tee box. So, I mean, I think Jack has been trying to make this case for a long time, and believe me, no one will be happier as to how difficult this course is going to play this weekend, as difficult it's already been, than Jack Nicklaus. He's thrilled.
Yeah. I want to say, I think I'm a 10.5, 10.5.
That's excellent.
You and I have had this conversation. Do you play a lot of golf?
I will just say this. If you spend any time around the tour, you have a hard time. I do ever using the word play again. I would say I struggle. That's what
Do you have a handicap? Do you have a handicap?
No, not one that I'm going to disclose. I'll tell you that. Okay. Certainly not. And certainly not where my family might be able to hear it or my friends. Yeah, certainly not.
I'm addicted. I'm And it is. It really is an addiction. And as we know, there could be worse things to be addicted to. But I am absolutely addicted to this game. And before we let you go, just looking at the leaderboard right now, thrilled that Tony Finau is up there.
Yeah.
Shocked that Jon Rahm on our ESPN Chalk site, I predicted Jon Rahm +300 to not make the cut. I told people to put money on that. Boy, was I way wrong. 8 under right now. He tees off in just a few minutes. But his game has just looked god-awful. He only played at Memorial once, and he didn't make the cut. This Spaniard, what has taken over him this week?
You were right in how you characterized his game. And if he were on this call with us, he'd say the same thing. Remember, before the break happened, Anita, he was playing beautifully, Jon Rahm was. And he just hasn't found the form here since the tour has resumed. Now, I think in a bigger way, one thing I wanted to say when you talk about your love for the game and how addicting it is I really do think that Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour, Anita, really deserve kudos for how they've handled the resumption of the tour. This event, yes, for example, was supposed to have crowds. It was supposed to have pro-ams, and they adjusted. And I think that's a great model for other sports as they return next week, as we see baseball, we see the bubble in the NBA. The fact that you don't have to get it perfect necessarily right away, you have to continue to make progress. And that's what the tour has done. And as a result, I think we've seen, look at the finish here just last week at the Workday, the 50-footer made by JT, and then Morikawa, who finds a way to bury the 25-footer on top of him and go on to win. I think it's been fantastic action, and I think this sets up for a great finish here as well.
And you talk about the finish right now. Again, Ryan Palmer and Tony Finau at the top of the leaderboard at 9 under. They're teeing off in about 10 minutes as well.
Right.
Gary Woodland is a guy that I'm looking at I think could make some noise the next 2 days. He's 6 under. He's coming into this 6 under. So is there a guy that you have seen that is anywhere near contention that you feel if his putter is hot, he can make some noise this weekend that you think really could pull an upset here?
You know, I would actually pick Rahm. I just think he's played very, very well. But if we're just going to go into the column purely not chalk, not speaking about wagering, but just intrigue, I continue to be compelled by Jordan Spieth. I don't know about you, Anita, but when you think of the it's mind-bending to consider that his last victory was the Open Championship 3 years ago. That's incredible to dwell upon. And he puts it together for short periods of time, and then not. I mean, his Friday round was an absolute adventure, and yet he finds a way to get the ball in the hole. If he figures it out, I'll be fascinated to see what the major season might hold in store for him. And he's also just one of the absolute best guys on tour.
So I got a little tip last year that he has a psychologist who's now traveling with him. Can you confirm or deny that, Tom?
Well, the teams that are now in the tour resumption that travel with the players, at least on site here, Anita, are very, very limited. So I do know that he's done a great deal of work on the mental side and on his mental game, and he's been honest about that. He's also said, interestingly, that maybe he needs to share less, not be quite as open, not wear his doubts on his sleeve in press conferences because it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling cycle. But there's something so appealing about his honesty and about his candor and at times his vulnerability as a player. We've seen him really struggle, but he's starting to put some things together. Now, he has to do it for 4 rounds. He's got to do it on a weekend. We get that, too. But he certainly intrigues me. And Gary Woodland is, a fantastic person to circle here. He's got a tremendous game. He's got a very strong iron game. If he could put the putter together here, and this is going to be, I'm telling you, Anita, watch out for this afternoon and for tomorrow afternoon. 94 degrees, 95 tomorrow. They are going to be lightning out here. We're not going to see 19 under wind like we did a week ago, that's for sure.
Interesting. Great stuff as always, Tom. And again, I know how busy you are, and please know how much we appreciate your time here on 98.7 ESPN. Thank you very much.
Hit him straight.
Your mouth to the golf god's ears. Thank you, Tom.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.